Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, one of my favorite conversations we've ever had on this show. It's with Emmanuel Acho, who has gone viral for his series called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. The videos came out right after the George Floyd incident. Millions and millions of people saw it. He wanted to turn it into a book. Oprah is helping to publish that book. The book is one of the New York Times bestsellers. Emmanuel Acho is a former NFL player. He's on Fox Sports 1 now with Marcellus Wiley on the show Speak for Yourself. And we had a fascinating, blunt, interesting, at times uncomfortable, at times funny conversation. Here it is. The book of the same name, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, debuted at number 3 on the New York Times bestsellers list. It has stayed on that list ever since. Basically, in publishing this year, it has been President Barack Obama and Emmanuel Acho. Emmanuel Acho, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Alex, if I could only get that introduction everywhere I go, I would be much better off then.
Well, I'm going to go one step further and say that I read the book and I really love the book. This is not like a brown-nosing thing, but it's basically you helping white people like me understand better how to think about race, how to talk about race, and it's approachable, it's realistic, it's researched, it's fun at times, it's not judgmental. You've created a safe space for a conversation that so many people have avoided having for hundreds of years. So bravo to you.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I think that I've realized, Alex, that the issue in our country is that there's a communication barrier. Black people and white people, yeah, we may all speak English, but it's translated differently based upon the culture in which we grew up. It's translated differently based upon the environments in which we grew up. So I just wanted to help my black brothers and sisters in this topic. I wanted to help my white brothers and sisters understand more. And rather than doing that in a divisive and an argumentative way, let's just do that in a way that has truth, that has grace, but also has love embodied as well.
Well, and speaking of culture, I think let's dig a little bit deeper into you before we dig into some of the issues themselves. I think it's helpful for people to get to know who you are. Your parents are from Nigeria. Both of them earned PhDs. You went to a mostly white, very affluent school in Dallas, Texas called St. Mark's, where you were mostly around white people. Then you played football at University of Texas in Austin, where you were mostly around black people. And then your perspective changed, which is why I think you have like a unique perspective here in that you have spent some time in both worlds.
Think about this. Everybody listening and watching this probably had to take a foreign language in high school. But if you all can think back, what did your Spanish or Japanese or Latin teacher tell you in high school? They said, Emmanuel, if you want to be fluent in this language, you need to go immerse yourself in that culture. I took Spanish for 7 years, but I'm not fluent in Spanish. Yes, I have Spanish-speaking friends. Sure, I listen to Spanish music, but I'm not fluent in Spanish because I was never immersed in Spanish culture. I grew up in a Nigerian household, immersed in Nigerian culture, eating Nigerian food, listening to Nigerian music, going back to live in Nigeria during the summers at times. But then I went to an affluent white school, like you said, for 8 years. And now I'm immersed in white culture amongst predominantly white people in all white spaces at times. But then I played football at the University of Texas and in the National Football League. So now I was immersed in black culture. Alex, that allowed me to be fluent in black culture and in white culture and in Nigerian culture. So I'm fully understanding the paradox, if you will, in communication. And that's why I think I've been afforded the opportunity to be heard in this time.
Right, which is an interesting and sort of unique perspective that you bring to this. So obviously race became such a big topic this year after the death of George Floyd. It was in people's face in a way that it had never been before, partly because of the pandemic, partly because of the technology and people actually seeing that video and seeing it for themselves in such a vivid way. And after that, you know, there were a lot of people that wanted to have this conversation but didn't know how. And so you tried to step into that space. You said, I want to do a web video with one of my white friends and call it Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. And then your white friend at the last minute called you in tears and she said, I can't do this. And so you did the video by yourself. And it was seen by tens of millions of people.
What was sort of the main message in that video?
So let me offer a small correction to you, but the rest of the world doesn't necessarily know it either. Before it was ever going to be called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, I initially was going to call it Questions White People Have. Right. Just very literally that, because I realized I'm about to answer a lot of questions that my white brothers and sisters have. Wait, why can't I say the N-word, but Black people can't? Wait, but what about Black-on-Black crime and violence in Chicago? Wait, why are Black people rioting? I was going to answer questions that white people have. But then a white friend called me and said, you know, Emmanuel, these questions aren't just white people. You know, there are other people that have them, too. She proposed, well, why don't you call it Uncomfortable Conversations? I said, it's kind of boring. Alex, I said, well, I'm a Black man. We'll call it Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. And so that's really how all of this started. It started by me realizing there are several questions that some people are too afraid to have, or if we're being honest, they just aren't as close to Black people to have these questions, to ask these questions, rather. So I said, allow me to be that Black friend. Allow me to be that Black colleague. Allow me to be that Black brother. Allow me to be that Black son and answer so many questions that you have in your heart or you have in your head.
So after that goes viral, you get a phone call from another famous UT grad, Matthew McConaughey, who says, I want to sit down and have an uncomfortable conversation. Were you sort of blown away by that?
So, true story, 6 days after the first episode, I get a call from a no caller ID number. I'm sitting at my glass table in Austin, Texas, downstairs, and my phone rings as I'm eating breakfast on a Saturday morning. All I hear is, Acho, McConaughey speaking. I want to have a conversation. I'm like, McConaughey? Like Matthew McConaughey? He's like, yeah, man, I want to have a conversation. I tell him, I say, well, look, Matthew, if I can. I said, I'm recording episode 2 in 4 days. He says, let's do it tomorrow. I said, okay, McConaughey wants to do it tomorrow. We do it tomorrow. Matthew McConaughey sits down with me for episode 2, and really the rest is history. Then what started out is just me sitting in a bare room pouring my heart out for 9 minutes and 27 seconds in episode 1. Alex, I didn't cut the camera. I didn't edit the video. It was just Emmanuel Acho for 9 minutes and 27 seconds emoting. After McConaughey sat down with me, that's when it truly turned into an episode and ultimately a show and ultimately a book.
And speaking of the book, you also got a call from a pretty well-known person in the publishing world who's also pretty well-known in the broadcasting industry. Take a look at this video.
So I'm privileged to have a partner and supporter to go on this journey with me.
Hey, Emmanuel. Hi, everybody. Yes, that's me, partner and supporter and publisher now.
You know you're big that when you say, yes, that's me, you don't even have to say your name because everybody knows what your name is, right? So what was it like working with Oprah? What did Oprah teach you?
Man, that's such a good question. We actually just spoke minutes ago because she's been an integral partner now just in all things Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. Let me tell you what she taught me. She said this. She said, Emmanuel, do not base your show off of famous people because eventually you will run out of famous people. I said, that's such a word. Alex, you got to think. I might be famous now, but I was a below average NFL football player. So when Matthew McConaughey called me, I was like, yes, I got a celebrity. Then Chip and Joanna Gaines reach out. They're episode 3. I'm like, yes, I got a celebrity. Who to next? Jennifer Aniston or Reese Witherspoon? Then Oprah sits me down and she's like, don't base your content off famous people. Base your content off the content itself. Mm. And that stuck with me because then I realized these conversations aren't about fame, and these conversations aren't for fame, and these conversations aren't brought from fame. These conversations are about you and me and every other person who walks their everyday life in their white skin or their brown skin, their black skin. These conversations are for the world. These conversations aren't necessarily for celebrities. These conversations are for you and me and everyone else.
That's such a profound point. But my biggest takeaway from that is you saying that you got off the phone from Oprah to do the issue is. So I'm just going to stick with that point. You said, sorry, Oprah.
I'm sorry.
I got to go. We got Alex over here. We are talking with Emmanuel Acho, the author of the wildly successful Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. So let's have a bit of an uncomfortable conversation. And let's start with how do you begin the conversation? So for somebody like me that grew up around mostly white people, you know, there's a bit of an insecurity sometimes that you're going to say the wrong thing. And in starting the conversation, it feels like you're going to, you know, walk onto a landmine. How do you actually begin? What's your opening line of a conversation?
I think that varies from person to person. But I think if I was someone like you speaking, my opening line is, hey, I apologize for my ignorance. Let me preface with the fact that, look, I am admitting that I don't know everything about everything. Now that I am admitting that, let's have a real conversation. We can't grow through trepidation, Alex. Our world will not evolve in out of being timid. Right. The only way we can grow is through discomfort. Think about a woman goes through no small amounts of discomfort and pain to bring forth a child. I went through no small amount of pain and discomfort in training camp to make it to the National Football League. If we want to grow collectively as human beings, we have to get uncomfortable. But I think oftentimes, I'll say it like this and I'll end it like this. There is a reason my first episode I say, dear white brothers and sisters, consider this a safe space. Because, Alex, no one cares what you know until they know that you care. Mm. So I would start the conversation just simply like, hey, I care about you. I'm having this conversation because I want to be better for you and for myself. And I apologize if I say anything out of ignorance that may offend you. Now that we have gotten that out of the way, here goes nothing.
What do you think is the biggest misconception that white people have about Black culture?
Oh, that's a good, awkward question. I'll answer like someone answered in one of my previous episodes. Alex, I sat down and I did an episode with a family of two white parents who had adopted three Black kids and had a biological white son. I asked this white child that question because if I were to answer it, I'd be biased. Let me ask a white teenage boy, hey, what is the biggest misconception you have about Black people? Because you have Black siblings or that you think white people have about Black people. And he said this, he said, I would say that not all Black people are thugs. And I think that's very honest. I think we have this conception and misconception in our society that to be Black is to be a thug or to be a gangster or to be hood, or whatever the case may be. And let me speak from my experience, because my experience is my expertise. Alex, at my school that you referenced earlier, St. Mark's, I would often hear, Emmanuel, you don't even talk like you're Black. Mm. Or Emmanuel, you don't even act like you're Black. Or Alex, my favorite, Emmanuel, you're like an Oreo, Black on the outside, white on the inside. It wasn't until I got to college that I realized how offensive and misguided that was. To say I don't talk like I'm Black is to say that because I sound intelligent, I don't talk Black. To say that I don't dress like I'm Black, mind you, I wore a uniform at my school, is to say that because I wear gray slacks and a white button down and have to wear a belt, I don't dress like I'm Black. Alex, to say that I'm like an Oreo, Black on the outside, white on the inside, is to say that because I articulate, because I am intelligent, I am not truly Black. And so I think the biggest misconception is all around the intellectual capacity of my Black brothers and sisters.
On the reverse of that, what do you think is the biggest misconception that Black people have about white people?
Oh, another great question. I think that there's a misconception that all white people are racist. Now, I think that there is racial insensitivity, and I think that there is racial ignorance. But I think the biggest misconception would be that, oh, they white, so they got to be racist. And that's not the case. I propose and I submit this, Alex. In our judicial system, there are degrees of murder. There is first-degree murder. That is premeditated. I thought about it. There is second-degree murder. That is a crime of passion. And then you move down the rungs and you get to involuntary manslaughter. While it was not intentional, it still led to death. I submit that most of my white brothers and sisters, they fall under the rung of involuntary racism. oh, you're so beautiful for a black girl. Mm. Oh my gosh, you sound so smart for a black man. Emmanuel, you're just so kind for a black man. The way you articulate, it's just so unique. I think that a lot of my brothers and sisters, my white brothers and sisters, fall under the rung of involuntary racism. You don't even necessarily know that what you're saying is killing the emotional state of your black brothers and sisters.
Yeah, there's a lot to love about your book, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. But one of the chapters that I thought was especially enlightening was when you talked about the concept of white privilege. And you phrased it like you're running a race, but you're starting in different places. Expand on that.
Yeah. So I love track and field. I love it. I live for it. The Olympic Games. I love track and field. And if y'all know anything about track and field, everyone starts at the starting line. Well, at times there can be a stagger, and that stagger is to make sure that you equate the distance around the track. But here's the kicker, Alex. I propose that in America, my white brothers and sisters got a 200 to 300 year head start over black people. Black people were enslaved, then there were Jim Crow laws. And so if now the starting official says, okay, everyone, you can go and you can run freely, and we might submit that the race is equal because, well, there's no slavery now and there are no Jim Crow laws now, we have to remember there was a 200, 300 year head start. There was a gap that has yet to be made up. I submit this, Alex. White privilege is not saying your life hasn't been hard. White privilege is simply saying your skin color hasn't contributed to the difficulty of your life. As a white person, I'm sure your life has been hard, just like everyone's life has been hard. It's just understanding your skin color hasn't been the main contributing factor to what made your life hard. Alex, I live in Los Angeles now, and so I bike a lot. And one time I was biking about 3 miles to the mall, and I was biking to the mall. I was flying there, Alex. I mean, I was cruising, made it there in record time. Well, I go into the mall, I buy what I need, and I hop back on my bike to bike back home. Now, all of a sudden, Alex, it was as though I couldn't pedal hard enough to gain speed. And it was because when I was going to the mall, I had a tailwind. See, but when I was going back home, I was biking into a headwind. I submit that to be black in America at times, oftentimes, it's to be biking into the headwind. To be white in America at times, oftentimes, is to be biking with the tailwind. And the trick about a tailwind is you don't know that you have it until you have to go against it.
And then, you know, you talk about systemic racism and a lot of the issues that lead to that as well. And you know, we've had this reckoning with Black Lives Matter where people are thinking about race in a different way. And you talk about becoming an ally in terms of sort of, so where do we go from here? We've had this crazy year that has disrupted so many things, including race relations. Where do we go from here in 2021 on the issue of race?
Well, number one, I think we have to continue to keep our foot on the gas. I think we have to understand that racial equality is not a finish line we will cross. It is a road that we will travel. So we must choose to continue to travel that road each and every day. I lived in a neighborhood in Austin, Texas, prior to moving to Los Angeles, and it was gentrified, and it was going through the process of gentrification, which means they were building houses like no other. And I travel a lot, Alex, so I would go to New York on work trips, come back 3 weeks later, and I would see the house would start to be more and more complete. The house is more and more complete. Alex, the houses weren't being built overnight, but rather a brick was being laid day after day after day. We have to choose to lay bricks of equality. We have to choose to lay bricks of love. We have to choose to lay bricks of understanding and lay bricks of empathy. So where do we go from here? It's continuing to choose to make the choice of hearing and diversifying our lives.
Such an important concept. And where we go from here on the show, we want to have a little bit of fun as well. So we play a game here called Personal Issues, where we want to get to know better our guest, Emmanuel Acho, the author of Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man. This is where we put 30 seconds up on the clock, and we ask you about some of your favorites. All right, you ready? What's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie is Bad Boys 2, Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, Gabrielle Union.
Favorite band or musical artist?
John Legend, easy.
Best way to relax?
Playing the piano myself. I like to play the piano.
Favorite TV show?
Favorite TV show, Breaking Bad.
Good one. Favorite meal to cook?
Favorite meal to cook, salmon with broccoli.
Favorite athlete?
Favorite athlete, let's go with Steph Curry.
And finally, who's your role model?
My role model, a gospel artist by the name of Kirk Franklin. I would also say Jamie Foxx. I would probably also say my brother.
Very nice. And by the way, if I eat salmon with broccoli, that's how we get to look like you, right? I mean, what a healthy choice there. All right, we also like to play a game called the name game. This is where I say the name of somebody that's well known, and then you come up with one word or a real short phrase to describe them. And so there's, you know, some big figures in race relations in our country as some of the theme with this, which goes with your book, of course. All right, ready? Here we go. Martin Luther King Jr.
Leader.
The late, great John Lewis.
Inspirational.
Former President Barack Obama.
There's so many things to say. Am I on the clock for this one or no?
No, no clock.
Okay. Revolutionary.
Current President Donald Trump.
Controversial.
There's a safe one. Colin Kaepernick.
Misunderstood.
Good one. Roger Goodell.
Unforgiven.
Oprah Winfrey.
Icon.
And finally, Marcellus Wiley.
Stubborn.
Of course, Marcellus is your co-host on Speak for Yourself on FS1. He's been a guest here on The Issue Is as well. And when we ended our conversation with him, I asked for some predictions in terms of what's happening in terms of sports. So I want you to watch this and then grade how well Marcellus did. Here we go. Who is going to win the Super Bowl?
The Ravens versus the Buccaneers. Who wins that game? The Baltimore Ravens.
Who is going to win the World Series?
The LA Dodgers, finally.
Who's going to win the NBA Finals?
Clip City, Chip City, Los Angeles Clippers.
I think it's going to be the Dodgers and either the Lakers or the Clippers. I tried to be diplomatic there, giving him a little bit of Clippers thing, but I thought it would be the Lakers. He's got that weird Clippers obsession that he
Look,
has.
He thinks he's an underdog. He lives for the underdog. And his opinions on your show are just as bad as his opinions on mine.
So let's get your opinions, the right opinions. Let's go through that. The predictions of who's going to win. So who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
I had Chiefs and Saints at the beginning of the season, and I think I had the Saints winning. I'm going to stick with my prediction of Chiefs-Saints, and I'm going to say I'll double down. Saints win.
All right. Who's going to win the World Series?
Let's go with, now that I'm in LA, let's go again with the Dodgers. Give me that. Double down.
Join the bandwagon, baby. And on that front, who's going to win the NBA Finals?
Lakers, Lakers, Lakers. I'm a LeBron stan. Where LeBron goes, I will go. Where LeBron stays, I will stay.
You are earning fans in the California market with this. Nicely done. This is our final show of the year. What a year it has been. I'm wondering, just as we wrap things up, what's your New Year's message and what you're thinking about as we head into 2021?
My New Year's message would be to, if you're listening to this, you made it through 2020. Don't take that for granted. Tell the people that you love them. Give people their flowers while they are around to smell them. And let all the difficulty, the tragedy, and the ultimate triumph of 2020 propel you into 2021. And go forth and change the world and change your world.
Wow. You know, we did the whole show with you. We could have done like two or three shows. You're so fantastic. Thank you for what you do. It's such an important conversation. Again, the book, Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man. You can watch those conversations online as well. Emmanuel Acho, thank you. Happy New Year.
Thank you, my friend. Happy New Year to you as well.
Our thanks to Emmanuel Acho, and we hope that this inspires you to think a little differently, and the book really is great. I highly recommend it. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is. Next week, we begin a new year. Lots to come in this crazy year. Hopefully it goes better than the last one. I'm Alex Michelson. See you next time.